government regulations, which were created to protect employees, are actually hurting them.
Regulation after regulation.
Until the government understands that they have to create an environment suitable for us to keep growing, we're going to stay in this recession a long time.
The federal government has blocked efforts to expand the ride-sharing.
The owners say the restaurant has succumbed to the crush of government regulations.
We have seen an unprecedented explosion of new regulatory activity.
$1.8 trillion. That's how much business
and bus companies to close.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be changed. There is red tape that needs to be cut.
The regulations are...
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep...
Is this really the best we can do?
This is Free Lunch, the podcast of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project. All expressions of opinion on this podcast are those of the speakers.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another Federalist Society Free Lunch podcast call for the Regulatory Transparency Project. I hope that you'll visit the RTP website at regproject.org, regproject.org, to subscribe to our newsletter and to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. My name is Devin Westhill. I'm the director of the RTP and the host of the Free Lunch Podcast. Our Free Lunch Podcast today examines a peculiar restriction on business owners in the Commonwealth of Virginia. In Virginia, it is perfectly legal to have a happy hour. You know, that period of time when we've all had it up to here, when a restaurant, for example, feels our collective pain and offers us discounts on its adult beverages. However, in Virginia, it is illegal to advertise the happy hour. And for at least one business owner, this restriction has led to an increase in the cost of doing business in Virginia. It has forced him to alter a very successful business model and has now motivated him to sue the state. That business owner and one of today's two Free Lunch Podcast guests is Jeffrey Tracy. Jeff is a Culinary Institute of America trained chef and entrepreneur. Jeff opened his first restaurant, Chef Jeff's, in Washington, D.C. in 2000. Since then, Jeff has opened five other restaurants in the area, including one in Vienna, Virginia. Jeff and his team oversee restaurant operations as well as managing the concept, menu development, marketing, finances, and growth at each and all of the restaurants. The restaurants serve 750,000 guests every year and employ more than 400 people. Jeff is also highly involved in various charities, boards, associations, and organizations in the Washington, D.C. community, and he has received numerous accolades and recognition of this involvement, including the National Restaurant Association's 2006 Best Neighbor Award. Also joining us as a guest today is Chef Jeff's lawyer in his lawsuit challenging Virginia's happy hour restriction, Anastasia P. Bowden. Anastasia is an attorney in the Pacific Legal Foundation's Economic Liberty Project, where she challenges anti-competitive licensing laws and laws that restrict freedom of speech. Anastasia's practice largely consists of representing entrepreneurs and small businesses. She's represented moving, limousine, and shuttle companies in competitors' veto lawsuits across the country, achieving legislative reform in Montana, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. In addition to litigating, Anastasia testifies before legislatures on the impact of occupational licensing on entrepreneurship. Her writings on all matters of law and liberty have been featured in the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, Forbes, and more. Anastasia earned her BA with Dean's Honors from the University of California, Santa Barbara, and her JD from Georgetown. She's previously been a research assistant to Professor Randy E. Barnett, worked at the Cato Institute, Center for Constitutional Studies, and at Washington Legal Foundation, and was a John Marshall Fellow at the Claremont Institute. I'm pleased to say that Anastasia is also a member of the RTP State and Local Regulation Working Group. Thank you, Anastasia. If you'd like to learn more about Jeff and Anastasia, please visit regproject.org. As a reminder, the Federal Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy initiatives, and therefore all expressions of opinion on Free Lunch podcasts are those of our featured speakers. Our guests will be taking questions after their remarks, so please be prepared with any questions that you might have prior to the start of our Q&A period. Okay. Thank you, Jeff and Anastasia, for participating in today's Free Lunch Podcast. I'm going to now hand the mic off to Anastasia to get us started with a few opening remarks. Anastasia, the floor is now yours.
Hi, and thanks, Devin, and thanks, everyone, for joining. This case concerns something that is very precious to people, particularly in the Washington, D.C. metro area, and I'm not just talking about the First Amendment, I'm talking about happy hour specials, of course, which are not only good fun for everyone involved, but they're actually a mutually beneficial transaction between both consumers who get reduced prices and businesses who get new foot traffic and hopefully repeat customers from these special offerings. So like many states, Virginia is full of outdated and paternalistic alcohol laws that limit how businesses can operate when it comes to dealing with alcohol. Even though prohibition ended nearly 100 years ago, alcohol or businesses that deal with alcohol are still treated like second-class businesses, and there are many anti-competitive and paternalistic regulations on the books to this day that really hamper businesses and have affected the growth of businesses who deal with them. Because businesses like Chef Jeff's, of course, not just provide happy hours, but Chef Jeff himself brews his very own beer, so these regulations can have effect on businesses like his. But in any event, we think that Virginia's happy hour law is particularly egregious in terms of its violations of the Constitution because it limits the way that businesses can communicate wholly truthful information about their business practices. In particular, the state says that no business can advertise happy hour prices, which is the most important piece of information when it comes to happy hour. Without the price, the ad is pretty much useless. That's the whole point of happy hour. And it also says that no business can use any term to describe its specials other than the generic happy hour or the rather sanitized term drink specials. So you can't say Wednesday wine down or Wednesday wine night or any other creative fun term in Virginia. There's no turn down for what Tuesday, to use a more modern term. No Sunday fun day. It's just drink specials in Virginia at some unspecified price. Finally, you can't offer two-for-one specials, even though you can offer half-price drinks. So we're arguing that even though that's sort of styled as a ban on conduct, it's actually a ban on speech, and that presents sort of an interesting legal issue that we can get into more later. So Pacific Legal Foundation is representing Jeff Tracy, who's a chef, restaurateur, cookbook author, and owner of three restaurants in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And we're arguing that these three restrictions on speech violate the First Amendment. And it may seem like sort of a light topic, and it is, but it also has real effects on businesses who can't advertise the way they want to or the way that they find most effective. And particularly for Chef Jeff, who has three restaurants in three different jurisdictions, it really drives up the compliance costs because now he can't say the same thing that he says in two other states in Virginia, meaning that he has to change the way that he advertises, change the way, you know, the menus that he presents. You know, it's all these compliance costs to make sure that he doesn't get cited, because from what we understand, Virginia actually really is going out and enforcing these happy hour laws with vigor, which is just kind of absurd. It's not one of those laws that's just staying on the books and resting dormant. They actually go out, rather than using their resources to, you know, protect public safety in some way, and cite businesses just for saying something like Wednesday wine night. So we think, again, that this is, you know, a serious issue for businesses, and it's also symptomatic of a bigger problem with government regulation. And the Regulatory Transparency Project has done a really good job of spreading awareness about this issue, but it's the fact that any one issue may seem like a minor issue on its own. You know, this happy advertising law, it seems like, okay, well, you have to change your advertising. It's not going to shut anybody out of business. It's not going to prevent anybody from starting a business. But together, when you get several of these regulations, they create what could be called a regulatory thicket that just becomes so burdensome that for a lot of people, together, these laws will be too much to bear because it's hard to even know what laws are on the books. It's hard to comply with all of them. It drives up, you know, your costs. You have to get an attorney. You have to figure it out. And when you keep encountering a bunch of little things like this, it can become just too much for some people. And so even though this law on its own may seem minor, you know, we would argue that it can, with all the myriad other regulations on the books, it can really be a challenge for businesses. And yet, there's no appreciable, or at least we would argue, no constitutional benefit to the public from a law like this. The government has tried to censor information like this in the past, and those cases have gone up to the Supreme Court, and we can talk about that again later. But the Supreme Court has found that there is no evidence that bans on speech about alcohol prices actually has any correlation to public safety, that it results in less drinking or less drinking and driving. In reality, this is just outright paternalism based on no evidence whatsoever. It's the government, it's Virginia, being afraid of what people might do with wholly truthful information. And that's not a good enough reason to censor somebody. That violates the First Amendment. The government can't censor people just because it thinks it's in the public's own best interest. So one other theme that comes up with this case is that it's really in line with several other outdated liquor laws across the country that people would really just be shocked to hear on the books in this day and age. So they can't believe that you can't advertise happy hour, but they also can't believe that, for instance, in Ohio, no alcohol advertisement can contain Santa Claus. Yes, they actually have a law for that. Somebody came to their mind that they needed to put a law on the books saying no alcohol advertisement with Santa in it. In Alabama, alcohol advertisements can't be too sensuous. There's all sorts of these sort of paternalistic and outdated restrictions on the way that businesses can operate and advertise. And we're hoping to set the precedent that the government can't do this for purely paternalistic reasons. So with that, I think I should hand it over to Chef Jeff, who can tell his story of dealing with Virginia's regulations better than I can, and his story of being an entrepreneur in the state, and then later we can delve a little bit more deeply into the legal issues. So with that, I hand it over to you, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much, and I wouldn't be on this call without you, and really appreciate what you and the Pacific Legal Foundation are doing to help represent me, but we're really representing all the Virginia business owners and all the Virginia customers. And that's a lot of people. So when we talk about this being, maybe a small little case, we're talking First Amendment here, and we're talking a lot of customers and a lot of business owners. So I really do think this is a very, very important case. I opened my restaurant in Virginia in 2008, about 10 years ago. And, Virginia has always been a good place to do business, but I did start to run into some of these sort of strange rules. And the first rule back in 2008 that I realized is that back in 2008 all the way to 2014, you weren't allowed to advertise happy hour at all outside the four walls of your restaurant. Once inside the restaurant, you could advertise it any way you wanted to. But once outside the walls, in a tweet, on a Facebook post, on a website, in a direct mail campaign, you couldn't use any of this term. So I'm heavily involved in the restaurant industry as a whole in the greater Washington area, and I was became the chairman for a number of years of the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington. And back in 2014, we really said, enough's enough with these sort of silly old laws. Let's get in there and do something about it. And so we lobbied down in Richmond, and we got some things actually changed, because most of the legislators didn't really even care about some of this stuff. And so we were able to sort of lobby our way. And so ultimately, in 2014, 2015, we got some things changed, and they loosened up the laws. They allowed us to say the word happy hour, to say the word drink specials. But we were still restricted on revealing pricing. And the argument on their side was that, yes, if I told somebody what the price of a beer was in some sort of advertising, a discounted beer, that those people would be more inclined to come in, consume copious amounts of alcohol to the point that you would get completely inebriated, then get in a car and then run over people. And I just found that to be sort of utterly ridiculous. And it's sort of like a kind of a worst case scenario type of thinking, but it's also probably not based in any reality. So we have this sort of final sort of step to sort of bring Virginia into the 21st century. And when I had the opportunity to file on a First Amendment basis. About the fact that I can't tell you what the price of a glass of Pinot Grigio is at happy hour, I was thrilled to work with the Pacific Legal Foundation. So I am hoping that, you know, we filed the lawsuit and, you know, we're waiting to hear back from Virginia. But I hope Virginia really is sort of smart because and that they basically agree with us on this. Because, again, Virginia is a great place to do business. It could just be better if it didn't have some of this frivolous stuff. And, you know, I consider myself to be a, you know, a relatively creative marketing guy. And I'd like to be able to use different terminology. I'd like to be able to use, I mean, we actually have a half-price wine night. I'd like to be able to use that in my advertising when it comes to my Virginia location. The other little trouble that I've run into is I've got three restaurants in the Washington, D.C. area. One is in Washington, one is in Maryland, and one is in Virginia. All three of these restaurants are about, you know, within a 10-mile radius of each other. And I've got customers who actually visit all of them. You know, they might work in Virginia, they might live in, you know, upper northwest Washington, D.C. They might cross the border to go to my restaurant in Chevy Chase, Maryland. And they're all you know, easily accessible by metro. You can zoom right around. But I've got a newsletter that I put out. You know, people who sign up I got about 65,000 people who receive my newsletter. And every, you know, week or so, I kind of write a little thing, and I will frequently mention happy hour. I'll mention half price wine night. I will even sometimes mention the prices, and that's sort of like, those are my sort of followers. But when I send that out, I kind of fall into a gray area of sort of compliance, you know, because I got the logos of all three restaurants at the bottom. So, you know, if Virginia really wanted to hunt me down, you know, they could find one of those and, you know, find me or potentially take away my liquor license, which would be the end of my restaurant in Virginia because people there like their cocktails. So, you know, it's just all these things. The restaurant business is a tough one. There's a lot of things going on. You got a lot of customers. You got a lot of employees. It's razor thin margins. So to you know, keep these sort of regulations that are just you know, annoyances sort of compiled up on each other, you know, kind of just makes things difficult to do. And you know, it's just one of those things that I think we can clean up on the books on Virginia and just make it a better place to do business.
Yeah, well, with that, I thought maybe we'd just talk a little bit more about these legal claims and explain them, because even though it appears like it's a very straightforward First Amendment case, you know, you just want to advertise the way that you find most effective or most creative, but there's actually some really interesting technical things going on underneath the surface. So for one thing, we want to affirm that there's no alcohol exception to the Constitution, because although we do have the 21st Amendment, which gives the states power over how they regulate alcohol, in so doing, the states cannot violate other provisions of the Constitution. And yet we hear a lot of times people arguing, well, there's the 21st Amendment, and so states have carte blanche to regulate alcohol. But that's just not true. So a few years back, the Supreme Court had held, for instance, that states, there were a few states on the books that discriminated against out-of-state wine distributors. They said that out-of-state wine distributors could not do direct-to-consumer sales, but in-state wine distributors could. And the Supreme Court held that violated the Commerce Clause. So even though, you know, states can regulate the way that alcohol is transported in and out of the state, there are independent restrictions in the Constitution that restrict the state's ability to do that. Another holding that had affirmed that was a case a few years back out of Rhode Island, where Rhode Island had banned the advertisement of liquor prices. So it's very, very on point with one of our claims here. And the state had argued that if there was advertisements of liquor prices, then people would consume more alcohol and that they would be reckless about it. And the state said that's just not true. And, you know, just because you're regulating something that you consider a vice doesn't mean that you get some sort of lower scrutiny. I mean, this is a First Amendment claim, and we're going to protect the First Amendment, and censorship's not okay, even with dealing with alcohol. So we want to sort of build on that precedent and affirm that there are these independent restrictions on the way that states can regulate alcohol. And that's important because there are so many anti-competitive and paternalistic regulations still on the book that we think are constitutionally infirm. Another point that we want to make through this litigation is that commercial speech enjoys First Amendment protection, and, you know, any opportunity to sort of beef up the protection for commercial speech is important. I don't know that this will be the case that takes down the commercial, non-commercial distinction in the Supreme Court, but there are some ways in which it does actually sort of undermine that distinction, because even though this would appear to be straightforward commercial speech, I mean, it's an advertisement of prices or, you know, describing your drink specials, describing your drink specials can involve, you know, a lot of creativity. And in a way, as Chef Jeff has demonstrated, it can also actually involve political speech, because when he has been banned from saying prices, he's been very clever and outspoken about voicing his opposition to these rules. So, you know, on Twitter, on his Twitter account and other places, you can see that he's very clever about what he says. You know, he'll say something like, Virginia, I'm very sorry to inform you that Virginia law prohibits me from telling you that I have drink specials tonight, you know, beers are $5 on draft. So this is clever. And, you know, this in one sense is commercial speech, but in another, it's political speech. He's voicing his disagreement with this law. And so it's very silly to sort of parse between, quote, commercial speech or political speech, when in a lot of cases they're going to be intertwined, and it's difficult to categorize speech as one thing or the other. So I think any chance that we can get to sort of undermine the court's distinction between those two types of speech is important to restoring the true purpose of the First Amendment and the text of the First Amendment, which is to give protection to all speech. The First Amendment, of course, doesn't say, you know, a little protection to commercial speech, a lot of protection to political speech. It just talks about speech in general. And so, you know, we hope to sort of bolster that any way we can, even if it's just from a rhetorical standpoint. And lastly, I think there's an interesting legal issue with regards to our last legal claim, which is that two-for-one specials are a ban on speech and not conduct. And that's following up from a very recent Supreme Court case called Expressions Hair, where there was a restriction on how businesses could describe, quote, surcharges or discounts for using a credit card. The credit card companies, you know, didn't want you to call charging 30 cents extra for a credit card transaction a surcharge, because that makes people less likely to use it. So they had lobbied for a law saying you could not call it a surcharge, you could only call any sort of pricing differential a discount. And when the government was defending that law, they had insisted that that was just a pricing regulation, it's just a conduct regulation, and it's not subject to First Amendment scrutiny. And the Supreme Court said, no, that's not true. You can't regulate speech under the guise of conduct. In reality, this is affecting businesses' ability to speak and to describe pricing the way they want, and that's a First Amendment issue. And so, in our case, a business is fully capable of offering, let's say, two drinks each for half price, but it cannot offer two-for-one specials. And though we expect the state to say this is just a pricing limitation, we're arguing, no, you can actually do the underlying thing, because you can offer two drinks for half price. What you can't do is describe that as two-for-one. And so we think that transforms this regulation really into a regulation of speech, because the underlying activity is legal. It's just the way that you say it that is regulated by the Virginia law. So those are the legal issues a little bit more in depth, and it's certainly a fun case. Historically, you know, as a public interest law firm, you have to be a little bit wary about getting into alcohol cases because it's already hard enough to win cases suing the government, particularly when it comes to any sort of economic right as it is. But then when you throw in alcohol to the mix, you know, you kind of get this knee-jerk reaction from not only the public, but also from courts that, oh, this is alcohol, this is dangerous, you know, we don't want to mess with this, this is scary, let's just uphold the law. But I think this case is really special because there's really no evidence that this law is furthering any public good, and it really does seem on its face to be pretty frivolous, so it presents a good way to sort of chip away at some of these alcohol laws. PLF was also, just to tell a fun story, PLF a few years back was involved in a lawsuit having to do with a small brewery in Florida, because in Florida, just until recently, they banned the standard size growler. And we argued that that was a restriction on our client's ability to sell alcohol in the way that he wanted. I mean, our client was a craft brewer. Craft breweries usually use growlers. And so this was clearly aimed at protecting bigger businesses from competition with small breweries. And so when we got to court, the government actually argued that their reason for the law was that they were afraid that somebody might consume an entire growler, hop in their car, drink and drive, and if pulled over, tell an officer that they had only had one drink. Yes, and that justified banning growlers outright. But what we knew was really an issue, of course, was that a standard-size growler is the closest that craft brewers come to competing with six-packs. So a standard growler holds about the same amount of beer as a six-pack. And so reality, this law was on the books to shield those bigger brewers from competition with smaller brewers. And luckily, after we bought that lawsuit, I mean, we would have been happy to litigate it, but, you know, the Florida sort of woke up and passed legislation that reintroduce the growler to Florida citizens. So this might be one of those cases where, you know, we think we have a very strong First Amendment claim and we're happy to litigate it, but it is so silly on its face that, you know, maybe the legislature will wake up and repeal these bans on speech before we get to the end of litigation. Who knows? So in any event, I think that describes the lawsuit and Chef Jeff's story. And Devin, I think we're both open to answering any questions there are.
Thanks so much, Anastasia, and thank you, Jeff, for telling us your story. I've got some questions that have come to mind, but I'm going to open up the line for questions from our audience, and to the extent that I get an opportunity, I will ask some of my questions. But in a moment, everyone on the call is going to hear a prompt indicating that the floor mode has been turned on. After that, you can request the floor by entering star and then pound on your telephone keypad. I'm going to open the floor now. Okay, the floor mode is on. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. When we get to your request, you'll hear a prompt, and then you can ask your question. We're going to answer all of those questions in the order in which they're received up until the top of the hour. Again, if you want to ask a question, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. We'll go to the first question now.
This is a question along the lines of the 21st Amendment giving a great deal more regulatory power to states in the alcohol business than elsewhere. And my specific question is that I do think there might be a rational basis for, even though it seems silly, the issue between half price and two for one. Because you could argue that if you get two for one, you're going to drink two. If you get half price, you may just buy one at half price. And if the public policy is to keep alcohol consumption fairly limited, which is a power they have since they could be a dry state, it would seem that they really may have a constitutional basis in the 21st Amendment.
I think one thing that is differentiates our claim a little bit from that is that it's not just that you can say half price and not two for one, but you can literally limit that to your special to two drinks for half price, but not two for one. So it's really in the phrasing, which I think is problematic. But I think one other point that we would make is that given that we're arguing that this is a First Amendment restriction, if the court agrees that this is not a price regulation, it's not a conduct regulation, but instead it is a speech regulation, we would get higher scrutiny than simply rational basis. Rational basis is very hard to meet. Typically I deal almost entirely with rational basis cases, and the court will even accept, you know, very far-fetched reasons for a given law. And I think you're right that the basis that you said might qualify under rational basis. But if we do get First Amendment scrutiny, I think that the court has a little bit bigger of a burden, and it has to prove that there's actually some evidence tending to show that these sort of different ways of describing things do have an appreciable effect on consumption. And so unless it can do that, and I doubt it's gone through it's tried to study that before, I think that we would win. But ultimately, it would be a legal win, at least just to say that this sort of thing is subject to First Amendment scrutiny. And then whether we win on the merits is a matter of whether the government can prove that it actually has a good reason for thinking its reasoning to be true.
Jeff, that was a question on a bit on constitutional law, but did you have any response there?
Well, I mean, you know, when you enable it so that you can get around, sort of work your way around it by coming up with a different wording for it, it just feels like you're starting to go into, sort of a strange place of, day-to-day regular business operations. When I could offer, somebody two drinks, both at half off, but not two for one, it just, these are things that drive business owners absolutely nuts, because we have a lot of things on our plate. We employ a lot of people. We feed a lot of people. I got a lot of things to worry about. Whether I get fined for that based on my wording, that stuff really kind of drives me crazy. So that's sort of my take. It's like, why have regulations that don't really have any sort of necessary impact on what actually will happen? I mean, if people want two drinks, they're going to get two drinks. They're half price. As business owners, we just don't need to deal with this sort of nitty gritty stuff that really just sort of impedes our ability to be successful on a day to day basis.
Yeah, understood. Thanks for the response, and thanks for the question. Again, for everyone on the call, if you have a question, just enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. We'll get to your question in order that it's received. I'll take an opportunity to ask a question that came to my mind, and this was from, I think, primarily Anastasia's remarks. But Anastasia, I heard you say on a few occasions that these laws and regulations really are motivated by sort of paternalism and this concern, perhaps, for public health and safety, notwithstanding some sincerity, I'm sure, in among some lawmakers and regulators. The public is generally, I think, sympathetic to at least the citation of this concern. But the rationale oftentimes can be quite outlandish for why a law or regulation is necessary. I mean, go back to your example of the growler and why you can't have growlers in the state of Florida for because someone is going to tell a police officer that they only had one drink that's quite outlandish. But these laws and regulations, in my experience in sort of studying these things, can be really a smokescreen for market competitors to establish some barriers to other competitors. Is any of that evident here, that this is sort of rent-seeking by others?
Yeah, and just to begin with, you know, I have to say we're sympathetic to actual public health and safety laws as well, you know, and we think that the state has every right to pass laws that are actually in the public interest and that actually do protect the public. It should absolutely prohibit drunk driving or do things that actually further the goals that they state. But as you said, a lot of laws tend to be a smokescreen, which is a nice thing about the First Amendment is it actually empowers courts to probe below what the state says and to ask for actual evidence. Because when we're dealing with, you know, conduct regulations, the state or the court basically takes states at their word. Even when they come up with crazy reasons, the courts will sort of defer to the legislature. So here we have an opportunity to probe a little more. There's no evidence here that this is protectionism, but you can imagine that it might be. You know, we don't know yet. We haven't gone through discovery. We might be able to find something that backs that up. It might also just be, you know, a well-meaning but paternalistic regulation. But you can imagine that it would be, because who stands to benefit from something like this? The established businesses who don't want newcomers or up-and-coming businesses or don't want any sort of threat to their hold on the happy hour game. It would not surprise me if this was supported by certain segments who think that it benefits them in some way, because then they don't have to compete on pricing or they don't have to compete with, you know, innovative offers or new businesses who need more exposure through happy hour advertising. So we just don't know if that's true, but it certainly might be, and oftentimes is the primary motivation lurking behind these supposed public health and safety regulations.
Yeah, and these laws have been in place for a long, long time. And in my experience, when we did the sort of lobbying efforts back in 2014 and 2015, it didn't feel like any of the people we were lobbying were really vested in any of these. You know, happy hour is a very normal, typical business practice amongst restaurants and bars across the country. So nobody really seemed, you know, you didn't have to lobby too hard to get them to loosen up some of the laws and regulations, but they just weren't willing to do the pricing thing. And you know, I'm not sure why that was. I think they were being sort of lobbied on the other side by like organizations like Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and so they just didn't want to put their political necks out there and to be the ones to sort of overturn it. And that's why I think this First Amendment route is an excellent one.
Well, thank you both for your response there. I'm going to make a quick announcement while I have an opportunity, and that is to say that on Friday we'll have another Free Lunch podcast call at our normal noon hour about what to do about Facebook on data privacy and the future of tech regulation. Experts from RTP Cyber and Privacy Working Group will discuss what happened, the economic, legal, and political consequences, and what this could mean for companies that have built business models around the use of user data. I'll make another call also for any questions in our audience. If you'd like to ask a question, enter star and then pound on your telephone keypad. Right now, I'll ask another question that I have, but if I don't see any other questions, I'll ask for final remarks from our speakers.
And Devin, if I may, I, you know, just following up on the last question, you know, because an example came to mind, you know, thinking about this idea of protectionist laws and paternalism, is alcohol laws are really a place where you actually do see bootleggers and Baptists together, you know, that phrase actually in practice in front of your eyes, because they are oftentimes laws where you actually do get real life temperance unions, because yes, those still exist, and you get people with actually protectionist aims banding together with those paternalistic people that result in some of these silly laws. So it's kind of interesting. So to give you an example, in Indiana, Indiana bans the sale of cold beer at grocery stores and convenience stores. So to this day, in 2018, you cannot buy a cold beer from a convenience store. And from what we know, it's part of it is a real effort by quote temperance unions to disincentivize drunk driving. They think that if you allow cold beer to be sold at grocery stores, that people might go to the grocery store and then drink their beer right away and once they're in the car and then drive home, which, you know, there's no evidence it's like that in the 49 other states that allow cold beer sales, but that's what they say, and I believe that that's what they really think. But on the other hand, we also get support for that law from the liquor stores, who are exempt because it gives them an upper hand when it comes to beer sales. Now, if people want cold beer, they're going to have to go to the liquor store, and they can't go to the convenience store or the grocery stores. And so the liquor stores like that very much. And so it's really interesting when you delve into some of these alcohol laws that they really are sort of a coalition oftentimes between paternalistic groups and also the protectionist groups. So you get a little bit of both.
I'm glad you
and we're bound as a restaurant owner. I mean, you're bound. I mean, you go through a lot of training before you get your liquor license in terms of proper alcohol service. And in addition, bartenders need to have a certification that they need to go through the state with. So there's a lot of training regulations in terms of how much you can't serve an intoxicated customer. There are very strict laws in Virginia about drunk driving. So there are other ways that they've gone to make sure sort of behavior is controlled, and that essentially the operators are serving alcohol in a responsible manner, but. Being able to tell people what the price of a glass of wine is, it just doesn't fall. It just doesn't make sense. Particularly where in jurisdictions 10 miles away, I am able to tell people what the price of a glass of wine is. And I can tell you what the price of a glass of wine is during non-happy hours. So like, at 8 o'clock, I can tell you what the price of a glass of wine is, but I can't tell you what it is between the hours of 4 and 7. It's just, again, these things sort of drive you up the wall.
No, I can imagine, and on Anastasia, to your point about the cold beer, I wonder what, if any, scientific data is supporting the laws or regulations that prevent the selling of cold beer. I mean, I certainly don't think that if I ran out to my truck after buying a six-pack of cold beer that I could even, even down one without a brain freeze or something. I'm just not sure. And I'm also, it's concerning when you think about, the unintended consequences that I think at least in part you were alluding to, and that is that if folks are sort of driven to the liquor store instead, that, what's to stop them, I think, from increasing their consumption of harder liquor, which actually goes contrary to what the underlying motivation is for the law or regulation that pushed them in that direction. So it's concerning as well. Good for the liquor store, right, which was the main point. In any event, I had another question, and I'll ask that question. But anyone who on the call who has a question, you can enter star and then pound on your cell phone keypad. This question is primarily for you, Jeff. I'm interested in knowing how this. Oftentimes we get caught up, although I think because it's an important issue and you're directly affected, we get caught up in talking about the business owner or big businesses and how they're affected by regulation or laws that are anti-competitive, et cetera. But not enough gets said about the employee who, without this regulation, could be doing much better, or without this law, et cetera, or are harmed in some way by this. You mentioned that you use Twitter, that you'd like to be innovative in your use of social media to advertise your happy hours. I am concerned, or I think that an inability to advertise your drink specials, the actual prices of these, in a meaningful way, harms your bartenders, their pocketbook in the state of Virginia, the way it doesn't, for example, those employees in the state of Maryland or the District of Columbia. Is that right?
Correct, and it's just not employees in my restaurant, but it's employees, you know, across the state of Virginia. You know, happy hour is a important part of my sort of business model. It's not the end all and the be all, but you know, it's a good part of it. But for, you know, a lot of bars out there, that's a really big thing, and it's just difficult to understand why we would want to try to limit the spread of truthful information about the pricing during a specific few hours of the day. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. And, you know, it probably takes money out of the pocket of bartenders and servers across the entire Commonwealth.
Yeah, I think if we actually really were sincere about upward mobility and people's ability to earn an honest living wage, we might support the repeal or the modification or improvement of these sorts of roadblocks for individuals just like that. So,
I would also argue that, you know, making compliance more complex than it needs to be sort of hinders the amount of businesses that are out there anyways. And so it's not only about a person who's making a little less money, but perhaps jobs that don't exist that should exist. And, you know, I think Virginia can do better. And, you know, by sort of agreeing with us, they would make Virginia a better place to do business.
Yeah, I think that is actually one of the things that Anastasia was suggesting. The RTP has actually been decent about broadcasting, and so I appreciate you bringing that back up. I mean, what is the actual unseen toll here that we're having to pay? What is the cost of actual entrepreneurs who are just discouraged by the regulatory thicket from
Anastasia? Anastasia described it as a thicket, right? You know, so maybe this one thing doesn't turn someone away, but maybe just, you know, all the different little things that you have to do, you know, when running a business in terms of sort of unnecessary compliance issues, ineffective compliance issues, you know, the stuff adds up and you know, makes people decide whether to, you know, open a business in the state of Virginia or not.
That really is I think one of the major concerns, and the Regulatory Transparency Project will soon come out with a paper that highlights instances of this and explains why the regulatory thicket is such sort of an impediment to economic growth and economic mobility and opportunity. So hopefully everyone will be looking out for that. Okay, I don't see any more questions from our audience. I'm going to let you guys go because I can maybe talk to you offline with all my other questions. But I want to give you an opportunity, if you have any closing remarks or anything that you haven't covered yet that you think should be covered in a discussion like this. Anastasia, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I think a lot of it's been covered, but except just to emphasize that, you know, if it's legal to do something, it has to be legal to talk about it. All of these business practices that Jeff can't talk about, he can do. And it's silly that you can actually do something and the public can go and get a beer for one price. You just can't say it. That harkens back to the days of the speakeasies when you had to, you know, knock four times to get in because you couldn't be saying anything out loud or broadcasting to the public what you're doing, even though nowadays it's perfectly legal to do it. So I think with that being said, you know, we just want to emphasize that there's, for this light topic, there are some heavy constitutional issues involved and some issues that affect all business owners in every state, but particularly in Virginia. And we're hoping to set the precedent that the government can't hamper First Amendment or economic rights in this way so that we can lead to a more friendly, not only business climate in Virginia, but across the country.
Thanks, Anastasia. Jeff, do you have any final thoughts?
So my final thought is, this thing's been out there for 2 weeks, and we've gotten a lot of press about it and stuff like that. I have not found one single person who's come to me and said, you know, what you're doing is a bad thing. they're all like, everybody agrees that they should be able to get the pricing of this, you know, during happy hour through advertising or newsletters or Twitter. When all my customers agree with me, I know I'm going in the right direction.
I think the market is a strong indicator of what
always,
direction
always.
You should be moving. That's right. On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, I want to thank our audience for joining us. And, of course, again, to thank you, Jeff, and Anastasia for joining us on the Free Lunch Podcast today. Until we meet again, hopefully this Friday, when we discuss data privacy and the future of tech regulation at noon on another podcast. So long, everyone. Goodbye.
On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to Free Lunch. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play to get new episodes of Free Lunch when they're published. Also, visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org. There, we regularly upload content in addition to our podcasts, such as short videos and papers, and you can join the discussion by sharing your story of how regulation has personally affected you. Until next time, remember, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.